Mr. Sakaza, good morning.
Good morning, Chair.
How are you?
Good, Chair. Good.
Okay, we are going to start in the next 2 minutes.
Okay, Chair.
We'll just wait until everybody is settled. I just wanted to check if my, remember I said using a laptop now.
Yes.
So I don't want to be messed up, but I think I'm managing.
Yeah, no, it's here for Gala Tatra, it can hear you properly.
Okay, and video?
Video, yabona Gala Tatra, Feli Gatra, yeah, you understand the Gatra.
Okay, okay. No, that's fine. That's fine. Sure.
Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. Now it's 1 minute past nine. We are then going to start our meeting. And in welcoming everybody, I think we know that today, am I audible, honorable Sakaza, Mr. Sakaza?
Yes, Chair, I can hear you.
Okay, we know that if things were normal, today we were not then going to be having a committee because we'll be preparing for the State of the Nation address, which is tomorrow. But we will still prepare for the State of the Nation address in terms of our mindset. But it's a Wednesday, which is the normal committee day. Having said that, honorable members, I've just been informed that one of our members, honorable Inanna, has lost his mother. Condolences to him, and we'll encourage members to either give him a call or WhatsApp in terms of messages of condolences. May her soul rest in peace. Having said that, I see all members, majority of members are here, and there was somebody who was called Gwen. I see now she has disappeared. I hope when Mr. Sakaza is making a roll call, we will then be able to give us an indication who is then that person.
She's still there, Chair.
Okay. Can we will we'll then allow Honorable, Mr. Sagaza to give us a roll call and then get somebody from States SA who's going to tell us who is there from their side. And also we'll check who are our guests in the meeting. Over to you, Mr. Sagaza.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Chair, we have from the Portfolio Committee, the Chairperson, Honorable Dunja. We've got Honorable Ngabane, Honorable Zuma, Honorable. We also have Honorable Begram, Honorable Khat, Honorable Mkhonto, and Honorable Dennis so far, Chair, from the members. From the support staff, we've got myself, committee secretary, we've got Poshia, the committee assistant, we've got who's the researcher, Mr. Mukwena. I'm just still looking if Mr. Ngobo is here. I can't see him yet. Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair. Mr. Sagaza, can from States SA, whoever is leading, take us through who is here from their side. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and indeed greetings, honorable members and other guests. My name is Risenga Maluleke, Statistician General. I'm joined by Gwen Lihwenya in this committee, in Portfolio Committee, as well as Malerato Musiane and Faisal Mohammed. Gwen Lihwenya is an acting DDG in Social Population and Social Statistics, where matters of labor are managed from. And Malerato Musiane is a chief director in labor market statistics. And Faisal is from the technical side to assist us navigate the presentation should it not load quickly from my side. So we usually get ourselves on standby so that we don't get disruptions on our presentations. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Maluleke. We will humbly request in future so that we don't being seen as being petty. These meetings would appreciate if a person, as you have done, your staff must also do that, say, Gwen, so-and-so from SSA, so that we don't then give a directive that we don't know her, she must then be taken out. But I'm happy that you have then clarified to us who is Gwen. Having said that, I don't want to waste time. I will then hand over to you because I see all the people that are here, I know them, not unless there's somebody who's going to sneak after I have spoken. But then hand over to you, sir, to take us to. We don't know who's going to, we're not going to be predictive. It's up to you. Who is going to start, who's going to make the presentation to us is that we are interested in your presentation. Over to you. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, let me say that I will do the presentation entirely from beginning to end. And beyond that, we have requested that we present quite early in this portfolio committee, because the Portfolio Committee under which Stats SA is reporting is looking at our quarterly reporting today. So I have to rush and join them. I have actually asked them that they allow me to appear before you first. And I do understand that previously I had sent Gwen and Malerato to appear before the committee, and you really wanted us to come back again. And in this regard, we are going to talk about quarter three of 2020 in the QLFS. But quarter three of 2020, Chairperson and honorable members, occurred in the environment of COVID-19. And this COVID-19 environment had restrictions, and such restrictions meant that we could not deal with the way we deal with issues naturally in our data collection, because there were restrictions that were necessary to combat COVID-19. As such, we were used to go to the field with paper-assisted personal interviews initially, and we went to computer-assisted personal interviews. And when it proved that it's not possible to go ahead as such, we decided to move in such a way that we would use telephones to reach out to our respondents, but using the first quarter of 2020 as a way of control, so that we can be able to account for the number of people that we have reached out. Number one is that use telephones. Not everyone in our sample has telephones. Some change their numbers, but not only that, there are times when we have found that even when they have telephones, if the main respondent in the household is an Ugogo, when you engage her on the telephone, it would be very difficult. That's why we had to go back to quarter one of 2020 as a reference point where we last interviewed our respondents in person. And of course, this would create a bias. If you have telephone numbers, you reach out to people with telephone numbers, you would create a bias. So we had to make sure that we adjust using the first quarter of 2020. We adjust quarter two and quarter three for purposes of getting an estimate on labor markets, both in the employed and unemployed. And this is done all over. We are not the only statistical agency that has seen fluctuations, especially caused by COVID-19. All statistical agencies in the world, according to the report released by the ILO, showed that with an exception of the United States and Canada, the United States didn't experience a full lockdown even when we're at stage five, Chair. Having said so, I want us to look at quarter three in reference to quarter two and what happened. Firstly, in quarter two, 2020, because people were not going out to look for employment, and on the basis of that, we had about 14.1 million people employed, 4.3 million people unemployed, 2.5 million people who were the discouraged work seeker, and 18.1 million people who were other not economically active. I want to qualify the other not economically active, Chair, because usually the discouraged work seeker is classified as classified in that category of not economically active. So you have the discouraged work seeker, you have people who say are too young or too old to work, you have people who are students, homemakers, and the like, who are sick, who form part of that not economically active. And when we separate the discouraged work seeker from them, then the other categories, we classify them as other not economically active. In this regard, Chair, I must say that from quarter one to quarter two, we had seen a lot of movements of people coming out of the employed and unemployed and not even going to the discouraged work seeker. They went straight to other not economically active because they couldn't actively look for employment. And in our estimates for labor markets, in terms of the ILO guidelines, we consider a person being not employed if they're actively looking for employment. So in this regard, our official definition, called the narrow definition, is when we look at unemployed people who are actively looking for employment. But we also publish the discouraged work seeker and together with the actively unemployed who are actively looking for employment, then we do come with an estimate of what we call the expanded definition, because the expanded definition also takes from people in other non-economically active who then say, I didn't look for employment, but I would have taken up employment had it been available. So every now and then we say unemployment is this percent. We are looking at the unemployed as in actively looking for employment. Now, let us look at the 4.3. That 4.3 represented, 4.3 million represented 23.1% as our unemployment rate. Now, when we look at the bottom part, in quarter three, because then levels of hard lockdown were eased. And in the process, more people went back to being employed, so they were employed. And the number of those who moved out from other not economically active on the right-hand side. So if we look at the top part of quarter two, the gray is much larger. When we come back down, the gray is actually shrinking because people moved out of being seated at their homes to go back to employment. That's why we see 14.7 million persons employed. And to actively look for employment, that meaning that then they became unemployed. That is why we end up with the 6.5 million people. And as such, those who were discouraged increased the bid from 2.5 million in quarter two to 2.7 million. Now, what does this represent in percentage terms? That 6.5 million people of people who were actively looking for employment in the third quarter of 2020 represented 30.8% as the unemployment rate, the official unemployment rate. And over and above that, we are able to sketch those who are in the labor force. That is, those who are employed and unemployed, they came to 21.2 million. And the population of working age in South Africa in quarter three of 2020 was 39.2 million, meaning that you look at everyone working age, whether they are employed, unemployed, and then you can unpack it in the necessary categories. Chairperson, the next slide talks to us about what we have seen in terms of movements of those who won. Those who were employed, we saw an increase from quarter two by 3.8%. And of course, we saw an increase of the unemployed people by 52.1%. And indeed, those that were not economically active dropped to 12.8%. That is why they moved down. Where were these people in terms of those that were employed, not employed, and then coming to what we call other not economically active? 3 million people moved out of other not economically active in quarter three, and the majority of them were what we call other on top. And the reason they gave us was that because of COVID-19. And we call it other because sometimes it's not always because of COVID. It could be anything. But as I've indicated, we have seen a decrease from quarter two of those people who were not economically active, moving back to economic activism, they decreased by 29.4%. And all the other categories increased, as we can see, students increased as to 37.3%, as well as the discouraged work seeker, they increased to 15% right at the bottom. Now, furthermore, before we come to that, the main reason they gave us in the other, the one that is in, at the top, Chairperson, was that because of the national lockdown and COVID-19, they could not look for employment. Now, what has happened to our labor markets over time, especially in terms of labor force participation rate, as well as the labor, the absorption rate? Firstly, is that the labor force participation rate is the proportion of all the working age people who are either employed or unemployed. And the absorption rate is the proportion of those that are in the working age that are employed. We just don't call it the employment rate or those, but the absorption rate tends to tell us in the working age how many people, what is the proportion of those that are employed. And we can see that over time, there's been a gap between the two lines, Chair. What it means is that there are more people who are eligible to work, but there are lesser people, as you can see the bottom line, there's a gap there between the two lines, who are actually employed. And over time, this coming out of 2010, the gap was 14.1 percentage points. But where we are sitting now, as in quarter three, it was 16.7 percentage points. And in this regards, this difference shows that it's increasing. Even when in quarter two of 2020, because of COVID, there were declines in both the lines, the decline still remained in a gap, meaning that we have more jobs than can meet the working age people. Let us come to look at what has happened to unemployment over time, coming out of 2010. over a decade, unemployment has been increasing steadily, Chairperson. While it dropped in quarter two of 2020, we can see that line that is on the right-hand side that drops a bit, but again rises. So it went to 23.3% and again rose again by 7.5 percentage points to 30.8%. And having said so, then we want to explain the expanded unemployment rate. Firstly, let us look at the official unemployment rate, which is the red line below. We have already spoken about it, that it's the 6.5 million people who were unemployed in quarter three of 2020, who constituted the unemployment rate of 30.8%. But when we look at the expanded definition, we take those 6.5 million people, we take also the 2.7 million people who are the discouraged work seekers. And furthermore, there were about 1.9 million persons, about 2 million, who said we didn't look for employment. They had other reasons for looking and not looking for employment. But if they got employment, they would have taken it. And as such, we ended up with 11.1 million persons who represent 43.1% as the expanded unemployment rate. We make these numbers, Chairperson, these percentages as in official, which is the narrow definition, and the expanded, so that we can have a clear understanding. One is the official unemployment rate is what our national development plan is tracking. So when we say we are looking at how our policy environment is responding, this is what we measure. But we also want to understand a full picture as a country, because your discouraged work seeker, Chairperson, still remains unemployed. And anyone who would be willing to take up employment, even when they are not actively looking for employment, are still classified as unemployed, except if they are not, they are saying, even if a job comes around, I would not be able to take it. So we do ask these questions. Chairperson, let us look at the provinces. In terms of the provinces, we can see that the Eastern Cape generally over time has the highest unemployment rate. That is the red color. We are using the official one. All what we see in red color, except the one in black, which is the South African average, which is 30.8, all the reds are the official unemployment rates for each province. Now we can see that at the bottom is the Western Cape. Generally, unemployment is generally low in the Western Cape. In Limpopo, it is generally low as well most of the time. Although Limpopo now is sitting at number three from the bottom, it's usually the lowest because we have a lot of discouraged work seekers from Limpopo. But not only that, what we do tend to see is that while all provinces, rural provinces, tend to show unemployment rates that are relatively higher, when we look at the expanded unemployment rate, it's even worse for rural provinces. They have the highest, as we can see, that in the Eastern Cape, it's sitting at 51.2%. Let us look at Limpopo, for example, right from the bottom. And I want us to compare it with the Western Cape. Limpopo, while it's sitting at 26.3% of the official unemployment rate, when we look at the expanded, it jumps by 20.6 percentage points to 46.9%, which means that you have a lot of discouraged work seekers sitting in Limpopo. So is the case with KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, Northwest. But when you look at the Western Cape, it's the jump between the official and expanded, which is right at the bottom, is very small, meaning that you don't have much discouraged work seekers in the Western Cape. Now, let us look at the formal sector, informal sector, and what has happened as well as in agriculture. The formal sector remains the biggest contributor to employment. It accounts to 70.2%, while the others are at their lowest. Actually, other than that, we see that all sectors are rising steadily, proportionally, over time, coming out of 2010. But certainly, the formal sector takes the larger chunk. Now, we want to see what happens in the formal sector, and when we look at the two quarters, we are saying that the formal sector employment increased by close to a quarter, between quarter to a quarter million jobs That is about 242 million jobs, as we can see on the left-hand side, between quarter two and quarter three, meaning that it was the biggest contributor in these gaps. Now, we want to go further and look at employment gains that were observed by industry. In this regard, in quarter three, coming out of the second quarter, that is quarter on quarter, we saw that finance, community and social service, that's where government is included in community and social services, as well as private households, people who work at our homes when we are not there, they were the biggest, they had the biggest gains of the employed quarter on quarter, that is between quarter two and quarter three. And in this regard, we want to look at which sectors contribute the most in employment, Chairperson, versus their share of nominal GDP. I want us to start at the, on the right-hand side, where we are seeing this is nominal GDP shares in quarter two of 2020. And we are saying this because at the time we hadn't received the updates on quarter three. So we used quarter two when we released quarter three on labor markets. On the GDP side, we hadn't released quarter three. Let us look, for example, community and social services, where government is included. We can see that it contributes 27.7% in nominal GDP. But the blue line that runs within that, it says that it contributes 23% in employment. So what it means is that this sector, while it's much more bigger, so is finance, the third one. It's much more bigger in nominal GDP. But when we come to its contributions, they are less. Only trade, construction, and agriculture, and consistently over time, Chairperson, have been able to contribute more employment than their share of nominal GDP. That is why when we look at the left-hand side, we can see that these areas, sectors, trade, construction, and agriculture, the green, the blue bar is much more bigger than the gray bar. Now, let us look at the unemployment rate of young people, 15 to 24 years. It did increase by 9% percentage points. That is, it increased to 61.3%. Young people, 15 to 24 years, Chairperson, are vulnerable to labor markets. No matter their level of their education, they still been exposed or vulnerable to labor markets. Their unemployment rate is always the highest. It's the same with women, and I'll come to that later. Women are vulnerable to labor markets. Having said so, let us look at population groups. Population groups, we are saying that the unemployment rate, let us start at, on the left-hand side. For whites, it's sitting at 8.6%. The unemployment rate of the Indians, Asians, is sitting at 18.4%. The unemployment rate of coloreds is sitting at 23.5%. And the unemployment rate of Black Africans is sitting at 34.6%. That is, it is above the green bubble, which is the national average. So Black Africans are much more affected by unemployment because they even exceed the national average. And this percentage is Chairperson and honorable members of the population groups tends to be like this all the time, where the whites are least unemployed, followed by the Indians, Asians, and the ones that usually come closer to the national average by unemployment are coloreds. And then the Black Africans generally go above the national average of unemployment all the time. Now, we want to look at this in relation to male-female in terms of men and women. And in this regard, we are saying that while the unemployment rate on average, as a country, is sitting at 38.8%. That is the left-hand side set of graphics. Right at the top, it's sitting at 38.8%. When we look at males, the unemployment rate of males is sitting at 29.6%, meaning that it's relatively lower, whereas that one of women is sitting at 32.3%. So women are much more vulnerable to labor markets than their male counterparts. But when we unpack further in terms of whether they are Black African, whether they are colored and the like, we see that Black African women are the most vulnerable, with an unemployment rate of 36%, 36.4% versus the national average, which is 30.8%. So they are far above, while Black Africans in general are much more vulnerable to labor markets. When you come to Black African women, they are much more exposed to unemployment. And even when we look at the expanded definition, it doesn't matter, irrespective of gender. When you look at the expanded definition, Black Africans and colored population groups remain vulnerable to labor markets. Now, we want to look at what did we do in terms of unemployment, employment, in terms of our legislation. And of course, in terms of legislation, we are looking at a lot of activities. And I know when, not activities, legislation, when our team appeared before, there was a question, status say should not be including young people of 15 years that are classified as unemployed. We only implement what the law says, Chairperson and honorable members. And of course, there are so many sections that we look at, but I just want to quote the one that is in the base of Unemployment Act, section 43.1, which says that no person may employ a child under the age of 15 years. And in this case, what it means is that it is illegal in South Africa to hire anybody who is 14 years and below, because under 15 years is 14 years and below. So anybody of 15 years who is not at school or as in being student, or who is not classified as other, not economically active, as being at school or being able to take up employment, or when they themselves say they are too young to take up employment. When they say so, we remove them from people actively looking for employment. But when they are active looking for employment, and because that's what the law, this parliament has given us as a country, we only implement the law. And when they say they are actively looking for employment, Chairperson, we actually classify them as employed if they are employed, or unemployed if they are not employed. And that is why we have that section of 15 to 24 years of young people. And having said so, now we want to see unemployment in terms of education levels across all age categories. One thing that we observe, especially on the left-hand side, those aged 15 to 24 years, they tend to be more exposed. Their bars, if you look, the blue bars on the left-hand side compared to the gray ones of 25 to 34, as well as the black ones of 35 to 64 years, the bars on the left-hand side are much more bigger, meaning that regardless of their level of education, young people remain vulnerable to labor markets. Let us look at graduates on the left-hand side under the blue color of 15 to 24 years. We can see that in their own group of that cohort of 15 to 24 years, it is the smallest, meaning that they are actually less unemployed when they are graduates, meaning that when young people 15 to 24 years are graduates, they can get employment. But when we compare them with their counterparts in ages 24, in the same graduate level, at ages 25 to 34 years, or 35 to 64 years, we can see that in that area of graduates, the other age categories, unemployment affects them less, whereas for young people, 15 to 24, it affects them the most. Now, let us look at the not economically active young people, not in employment, education, or training, young people. The young people in this category called NEET, before we look at them as whether they are employed or they are at school or what, in terms of the age 15 to 24 years, in quarter three, there were 10.3 million young people aged 15 to 24 years. Of those, 3.3 million, Chairperson, were not in employment, education, or training. as such, they constituted 31.9%. These are young people, Chairperson, who wake up every morning with nothing to do, and they roam the streets. And when we look at them in terms of male, female, we can see that actually female young people are affected the most. As we can see, the pink color is higher than the blue color at the bottom. It's even worse when we look at those aged 15 to 34 years. Youth formations tend to ask us for this category, 15 to 34 years. We are saying that in third quarter of 20, there were 20.1 million people aged 15 to 34 years. These people, 20.1 million, it's regardless as whether they are employed, unemployed, or where. But those who were not in employment, education, or training were 8.8 million in this, and they represented, for you can see, the color pink is higher than the color blue, which means that women are affected the most. Let us look at the COVID environment. What happened during the COVID environment? During the COVID environment, there are 72% of the people, the working age people, indicated that they were expected to work during the COVID-19 lockdown. And in this regard, that is about 7 out of every 10 people who were working. And where were they? In which categories were they working? Generally, we want to, on the left-hand side with the lighter color, orange color, we want to check those who work from home versus work, those who work from place. Professionals and managers and skilled agriculture and technicians tended to work from home because they have the tools of trade, as well as their working environment allows them to work from home, Chairperson. I'm connecting from home as I'm talking to you now, Chairperson and honorable members. This is what other people, as domestic workers, people who worked in plant and machine operators, as well as elementary work, sales and services, they could not afford to work from home. So even during the lockdown, they had to go to their place from there, because they don't have the tools of trade, but the nature of their work doesn't necessarily allow them. And all of us connecting here, the majority of us are connecting from our homes because we have the tools of trade. Now, let us look at what happened. 7.3% of the employed continued to receive a pay during the lockdown. As we can see, only 12% did not receive pay. And we may just say only, but it's in terms of volumes, this can be quite larger. And then those who received full salary, that is on the right-hand side, were 81.2%, meaning that 18.9% didn't receive full salary. Their salaries were reduced. About 20% had their salaries reduced during the lockdown. And we can also check in terms of those that were graduates, those who were less than matric. Now, when we look at those who were levels of education, lower levels of education tended to make people receive lesser salaries. Even graduates could not get 100% of their pay. Graduates only got about 90% of their full pay in quarter three, whereas the other categories tended to receive, let's look on the left-hand side, those with less than matric, only 79.3% received their full pay, as compared to graduates on the right-hand side, 89.9%, which is about 90%. Let us recap, Chairperson. The unemployment rate in quarter three of 2020 was 30.8%. And of course, it represented an increase of 7.5%. As such, the absorption rate was 37.5%, whereas the labor force participation rate was 54.2%. And areas of finance, community and social services, as well as private households, contributed to those who were employed. The not economically active decreased by 2 point, not, I want to say the not economically active decreased by 2.6 million people, but the majority of these didn't go directly to your discouraged work seeker, Chairperson. They went straight to either being employed or being unemployed, as in actively looking for employment. The next slide, Chairperson, says, and it has a history in our country. When I was young, Chair and honorable members, growing up in the village, our mothers could not read and write. And they would write letters to our fathers, throw us as intermediaries, because we could read and write. When our mothers concluded their letters, they couldn't tell their husbands sweet words like, I love you or I miss you, my husband. They could only, this was a standard way of concluding a letter, ndihela kwa, meaning that geda kona up. And in kifela hona mo, ndifela hane kwa ngajven. Now, Chairperson, we are saying that never and never again, Washman there, that we should have a section in our society that being this disadvantaged, even by labor markets, they should not be able to fully express themselves, even on matters they hold dearly to themselves, including when they write to their loved ones. So the next slide, Chairperson, it looks like it's blank. And because it's blank, I will end here, Chairperson, if you allow me. Thank you, Chair, and honorable members.
Thank you very much, Mr. Maluleg. Quite an interesting but challenging presentation. Honorable members, there is the presentation. Can I check, are there any questions of clarity, comments from here?
If possible, so, Madam Chair, Michael Bagram.
Honorable Bagram, can before the next person, Ms. Sakaza, who's the Tembele Chwete?
Tembele Chwete, I think, is from the department. He can explain
you
himself.
Can he explain himself?
He left, Chairperson.
Ndiyambona ubalekile. Akazuphinda abuye.
Okay, sir.
Yeah, immediately somebody is asked to introduce himself and he then runs away. We're not going to admit him back. Who is Honorable Bagram, the next?
Mkonto.
Honorable Mkonto, okay. The next?
Michael Cardo.
Honorable Cardo.
Dina, please, Chair.
Honorable Dana. Okay. In that order. Honorable Bagram.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it and thank you very much to Stats. It's been a wonderful experience listening to them, so thank you very much. Just a couple of things. The first thing is, any explanation as to why the Western Province is so much further ahead in employment statistics than all the other provinces, and also the gap is so small. In other words, once people have found a job, they don't give up looking, or if can't find a job, they find them quite quickly. I'd be interested to know what they're doing right and how can we get that recreated in the other provinces. The other thing, obviously, is the methodology of it, and I understand that you have to use the telephone because you can't go to people during a pandemic of this nature. It's something that we've never experienced before, and I commend you for using the telephone and not just throwing your hands up and saying, well, we can't conduct ourselves at all. But the reality is the figures are obviously skewed quite radically because many of the unemployed or people who have given up looking for employment don't have telephones or data or any activity at all on telephones, and it's probably skewed to the extent that I don't know how much percentage, but maybe you could give us a guess or a guesstimate as to what it would be if people who were actually visited in the villages or in the townships and their experience about trying to find jobs. So thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it.
Honourable Abigram, Honourable Nkonto. Good morning, Chair. Honourable members, our colleagues from the department and the general statistician, Mr. Maluleke, and his team. Thanks very much, Chair, for the opportunity. Chair, I welcome the presentation. I'm a bit worried about what the presentation present as discouraged work seekers. Chair, as Mr. Honorable Begram has said, maybe we should go deeper into checking as to why are they discouraged. Maybe it might be a matter of I have 10 rands. Instead of buying data or making a call, I will buy bread. I would prefer to buy bread because there is no bread. There is nothing to eat. It's quite a high percentage of people that the presentation refer to discouraged work seekers. But I don't think we have all the reasons behind them falling under that category. Chair, I know it's beyond our control as a committee, but I feel that the presentation is saying to us we are having a very high number of or percentage of people that are unemployed in our country. And I don't think that this department alone can be able, or our minister alone can be able to address all the challenges that are referred to in this presentation. That is why, Chair, I'm saying maybe your good self can advise us as to how can we, maybe through the office of the speaker, request the president to have an interministerial team of all the relevant and affected departments immediately after the COVID resurgence and whatever, because we are told we are going to stay with COVID for quite a long time. But when people are able to get out of their houses and go and look for jobs, I think, Chairperson, if we the president can assist with maybe an interministerial team, maybe our department, the Department of Enterprises, and other relevant departments, so that the ministers are able to address this. Because, Chairperson, as honorable members have been saying, and you also have been saying, this is a ticking bomb. And we need all means to make sure that we are able to try and intervene in this matter. Thanks, Chairperson. Chair? Thank you. Yeah, thank I'm you. Thank you, Kondo. I have seen your hand, Honorable Nonsele. Can we then have Honorable Kado?
Thanks, Chair. I've got two fairly straightforward questions. The first is, has SSA
done any research into the effect of minimum wage increases on the employment profile in South Africa? In other words, has it done any research into whether minimum wage increases has any effect on jobs and job losses? And then secondly, has Stats SA done any forecasting and projections around total job losses caused due to COVID-19? Has it given any thought or done any research on what it thinks the overall employment profile will look like at the end of this calendar year because of COVID-19 and the associated lockdowns? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Ricardo. Can we, Honourable Dana?
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Ricardo has covered my question to a large extent, so I will wait for the answer to his question.
Thank you. Honourable Nonsele?
Morning, Chair. Morning, Honourable Members. Thanks for the presentation, SG. My question is not necessarily the same, but is just to check on the status, whether, for instance, taking into account the overall picture that they have given with regard to unemployment, the various aspects relevant to it. But there is just one aspect that thinks perhaps it can help also eliminate the extent to which the areas that we're talking to with regard to employment, whether those employment are in fact employment that can in fact look at as positives in terms of their content. Like, for instance, the extent to which Stats SA can be able to talk and reflect to a greater degree underemployment. Underemployment basically talks to people who are employed but have their skills not recognized on the one aspect, but also people who are in fact doing low-skill jobs but at the same time getting low wages. Yet in some instances we find that those people in fact had much more high skills and yet they in fact get low wages. So the extent, for instance, that we are able to explain the levels with regard to employment areas so that tomorrow when we in fact address overall across provinces the issue of unemployment, we're able also to say to an extent that people are in fact in their high numbers are absorbed within the economy. We're able then to reflect more in a balanced way to the extent to which there are still persistent levels of underemployment. I think it's more or less the same, but not exactly the same with what Honorable Kato was asking. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Nonsele. I see Honorable Ndabe's hand. Is your hand still up, Honorable Ndabe?
Yes, Chair, partly covered by Honorable Nonsele, but a rider to that question is, have Stats SA done a survey that would then say, is it because of this high unemployment rate, is it because of population increase or retrenchments or an increase in the number or a decrease in the number that is required in terms of the skills in relation to growing the development of the economy? I just want to get a balance as to what is the nature of this increase in the unemployment rate, if we can be clarified on that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Mine, SG, is on, have you, because I'm of the understanding that there are institutions that are able to give you the level of, or the number of young people that have got skills but who are not employed in certain sectors. I'm saying institutions, I just want to check that do you also go as far as those institutions, and those institutions are TVET colleges, where you would then be able to be told that we have trained these number, the number of in these sectors, either in administration, in tourism, in engineering, but they are, none of the employers have come, but if they have come, they have come to this sector, either in engineering. I just want to check if you do go to that extent. Secondly, is that I just want to make to check if you talk about unemployed persons, there are those that, okay, let me rephrase. In the number of white persons, that the number of their of unemployment is low, does it also include those that are self-employed? I'm saying self-employed is either people are doing this. Do you also go to that extent? Because I would really want us to have that balance. Let me talk about myself. I may be asking questions that maybe they are not within your scope, but don't you think that if they are not within your scope, that as we move forward in this new normal, because we are in a very difficult environment now, where we are to really know exactly and see exactly what is the situation. It takes me now to government departments. There are different sectors there, in different sectors and different categories, because we are really to have an understanding. And if then my questions are not within your scope, if they are not within your scope, don't you think that it's important that you become involved through departments? Because what Honorable Mkhonto have said, it's true, is that we are to create a conducive environment. It's not only our responsibility. Our responsibility is to create a conducive environment. And therefore, how then do we ensure that government is not working in silos? We are to have that information. So I may be asking questions that are not within your presentation, but your presentation has made me to really look to look into those. The only thing that is frustrating me, which is not because of your own making, is this thing of the pandemic, that you are not able to have that interaction with those young people. I'm staying in PE. Those young people, abames khangin, I speak closer now. A khanga is a lane, where people just stand there not knowing what to do, and you were dependent on a phone. But I don't blame you. That's why I'm saying it's a situation and a condition beyond your control. Those will be my questions and my comments, SG, but thank you very much for. I will then allow you to respond. How you respond will depend on you. Honorable Nontsele, do you still want to ask a question? I see your hand is still up.
No, it's a historical hand, Chair. Sorry.
Okay. Over to you, Mr. Maluleka.
Thank you, Chairperson, and indeed, thank you, honorable members. I will ask Malerato Musiana, our Chief Director responsible for labor markets, to deal with three questions. The one that you raised about self-employment amongst the whites or in society in general, how we treat it, and then and the issues of institutions, whether we go to TVET institutions, as well as Chairperson, the questions that were asked by Honorable Nonsele on the issue of underemployment, and indeed Honorable Ndabe, who raised the issues of what is driving this unemployment rate. Is it a population increase or underemployment or what? Malerato, if you could deal with these three questions, I'll deal with the rest. It's actually four questions, Malerato. Malerato, are you there?
I'm here, SG.
Please go ahead.
Yes. Good morning. I will start with the question that was asked by Honorable Nonsele, which is related to underemployment in terms of whether we look at whether the skills that people have in terms of the wages that they earn. We do collect information on earnings, and we also publish that information in terms of which occupations people are in and how much they earn. But in terms of time-related underemployment, we only focus in terms of underemployment, we only focus on time-related underemployment in our reports, where we look at those people who are working for 35 hours or less, and they want to work more hours, and they have taken steps to look for extra work. And if they have, then we are getting them to be in time-related underemployment. However, that proportion is not very large. It's around 25% of people who are in time-related underemployment. But when you look at the skills, we actually only use occupation as an indication of skills. And we have seen that those people who are in high-skilled occupations do actually earn more than those that are in low-skilled occupations. And on the question by Honorable Ndabe, in terms of what is the nature of the increase that we are seeing, employment statistics, whether it's linked to population increase and all that, every quarter we see an increase in the population. And as such, there is an increase in the population of working age. So those who were not in the age group 15, who were not aged 15 in the previous quarter, they now join the working age population. But of course, there are some who leave the working age population. That is those who turn 65 in that particular quarter. So yes, population increase, that's contribute to the number of people who are joining the working age group and are also looking for employment and available. However, we have also seen, especially in the first quarter of the year, we usually see a lot of new entrants who are joining the labor market who were not in the labor market in the previous quarter, especially in January, where the young people who had just graduated now start looking for work. So we have seen an increase, especially in that particular quarter, of the new entrants into the labor market. But we also know that we have a high percentage of young people who are struggling to find employment in the South African labor market. So it's mainly women, young people, that are really struggling to get jobs in the South African labor market. And those are the people that are contributing to the high numbers that we are seeing in our unemployment figures. And when it comes to Honorable Dunja, in terms of whether we go to institutions that are training people to see if those people that have been given skills in particular fields are actually getting employed. No, we don't go to institutions. We go to where people reside to ask them questions in terms of whether they have looked for work and what their qualifications are. We do have that information, but we get it from the respondents themselves, not from the institutions of higher learning. I'm not sure, SG, if I have answered all the questions that you wanted.
The self-employed. Yeah, the self-employed.
The self-employed. The people who are self-employed, those are the people who run their own businesses
either they are employing some people that will be employers, or they are working by themselves, then they will be own account workers. They are included in our estimates of employment, but not unemployment. For you to be employed, you should have looked for work. You should have worked for at least 1 hour. Either you're working for someone else for pay, or you were running your own business, big or small, on your own or with partners, or you were working in a family business, even though you were not getting paid. And also, if you were temporarily absent from your business in the reference week, that is the week before the survey interview, you will also be regarded as employed, provided you are definitely returning to that particular job. So those who are in self-employment are included in our employment estimate. Thank you.
Thank you, Malerato. Then I will deal with the others, Chairperson. What happens is generally when it comes to the employed, the self-employed and the those who are employed are classified as employed. And we collect data from on employment from the quarterly labor force survey, where we go to households and talk to them. So they tell us, for example, this issue that Chairperson, you were raising. If we were to go to a TVET college, they would tell us how many people they trained or in the previous year, but they would never know how many people that after they've trained them and they have left, how many people got employment, if those people got employed in the last week or two in the reference period. So we go to people in the households. That is the quarterly labor force survey. We also have the quarterly employment survey, where we go to the factory gates. So when you look at the business register, it has all businesses. And this is we get this updated every month, or if there are companies that have fallen off, we get this from SARS. Now, we go to these factories and we want to know how many people they employed, in which areas they have employed. And all this helps us not only for that, but also for wages and salaries, because then we know we can estimate whether wages went higher or lower. Now, let me deal with the questions raised by Honorable Begram in terms of why the Western Cape, why is it keeping the lowest unemployment? What is happening is that consistently the Western Cape is keeping the lowest employment. Not actually, the lowest is actually in Limpopo in official terms, but when we start expanding the unemployment, Limpopo jumps up and the Western Cape remains lowest. So what happens is that the people are saying that their ability to reach out to workplaces in all the other provinces is very far. For example, the people in Limpopo say, work is in city centers and we run out of money. We can no longer be able to sustain our ability to go out to the urban centers where employment is. Whereas in the Western Cape, they are saying that even when they are far away from urban centers, they are able to access farms and other workplaces that they can readily work. Telephone interview and the bias that may have been created. We eliminated the bias, Chair. Happens is that the last time we went to collect information from everyone was in quarter one of 2020. After quarter one, we were not able to reach out to people. We could only reach out to those who have telephones. So in, for example, we were able to reach out to an average of 65% of our respondents that were there in previous quarters, but particularly in quarter one of 2020. This 65% are those that had telephones. The lowest was that number of telephones were in the Northern Cape, where we had 43%. And the highest were in Mpumalanga. But when we had collected information from all these people, we even have the response rates. So what happened is that, for example, our response rates ranged from 73% to about 86% in different provinces. So we went back to the first quarter and say that since in second and third quarter, we only have people who had telephones alone, we want to eliminate a bias Then we used the first quarter, which was the last quarter where we went to collect information on all our respondents. And then we did what we call data confrontation to be able to eliminate the bias. So the numbers we have made available are not having bias because we have eliminated that. And that is allowed in statistical terms, in terms of dealing with data and data processing. And we are not the only country, as I indicated, almost all countries, with an exception of Canada and the United States, didn't have to experience much. Actually, some countries like France even went to an extent of facing unemployment going in the negative, which has never been seen before in such economies. And if you look at generally every country, we do meet as statisticians. Even during COVID, we've been talking on methods and how we improve our methods. Let's just say it's amongst the top five agencies in the world that will discuss on any matters statistical methods on official statistics. In the days we'll be as the United Nations. Actually, this afternoon, I'm presenting at the United Nations on matters relating to COVID, the COVID environment and its impact on data collection in the world. So we do share methods, and the ILO was very good in providing guidance on how we could deal with these situations. Now, Honorable Nkonto raised the issue of the discouraged work seeker, that this discouraged work seeker keeps on increasing. And indeed, what he rein in, and are there no other reasons, or what are the reasons that they are giving? This is similar to the point I was raising to Honorable Begram, where I said in the Western Cape, you have lesser numbers of discouraged work seekers because they can reach urban centers and employment centers a lot more easily than have. We usually have another issue that I see in cities. They will say we have informal settlements. In our general household survey, we see informal settlements are actually increasing in the Western Cape. Actually, the highest is in Gauteng, followed by the Northwest, followed by the Western Cape. And this is where households are increasing the most. And people want to be nearer to workplaces. So every morning, most of us, when we drive to our workplaces, we see people at street corners seated there. They stay in informal settlements in the neighborhood. They tend to come and look for employment so that they don't become the discouraged work seekers because they are nearer to urban centers. And of course, Honorable Kado asked if we are doing research in the areas of the effects of minimum wage as well as on forecasting. Let me start with the minimum wage. The nature of state SA's work is that we deal with what we call outcomes. And I will use, Chairperson, analogy to explain what happens. Input indicators are your budgets where people spend money. Process indicators are the rate at which, for example, when they are building houses, input will be what they spend in acquiring bricks and the like and mortar. Process indicators, number of houses produced per day or per an hour. Output is the number of houses that were built. Outcomes are the number of people who access those houses. So we operate at the level of outcomes, the number of people who say they can access jobs and the like. Then impact is what are the changes in the life circumstances. So if people have housing, what is the improvements on their life circumstances in terms of education for their children, healthcare, and everything? That work doesn't sit with us. It sits with institutions that do research because we don't focus on looking at a specific problem of research. We only do sample surveys. So the HSRC does this kind of researches from time to time. And it's for this reason that on forecasting in terms of the impact of COVID-19, we cannot forecast and we do not forecast. We do on our mid-year estimates. And this is the only area where, as statisticians all over the world, have agreed that in our media estimates, we can actually give a five-year horizon, because populations have a particular causal causality that they follow. So if there's a pandemic like HIV, it will show over time. If there's a pandemic like COVID, it will show. But that's the only area where we do. The others are very shaky forecast. And I'll give an example. In quarter one, unemployment was sitting in the region of about 29.1%, 30.1%. In quarter two, because of COVID, it dropped right to 23.3%. And no amount of forecasting would have seen that coming, because people then went to sit at home and they didn't look for employment. Commentators were saying because of lockdown, unemployment will be very high, and we said we will go and measure. The other issue in relation to forecasting is that not only on labor markets, but even in the economy. The economy, for example, and labor markets are part of the economy, and what happens in the economy is very, it's affected by external and internal forces, endogenous and exogenous forces. Now, what happens if we were to forecast and say unemployment because of COVID or the impact will be this percentage going forward, and something drastic happened in our economy and unemployment goes south or improves a bit, employment improves, we would have missed that. And once we miss that, we would have, when the real numbers come, we would shy off from making them available. And when we shy off, Chairperson and Honorable Members, we will have lost our independence. So a statistical agency in official practice cannot lose its independence. One country in the world has done forecasting in the 80s. That was Ireland. Iceland, my apologies. And they actually had a lot of challenges with their entire statistics system, which goes beyond, in our case, goes beyond statistics. So Chairperson, those are our responses on all the questions that were presented to us. And if at an appropriate time, Chairperson, if you would allow me, once we are done with questions, to run and join the portfolio committee and report on our quarterly performance as statistics. Thank you, Chairperson. Ndihela
Gwala. Thank you, Mr. Maluleka. I think you can, you do have your staff behind. I mean, it will be remaining with us, as you will then be leaving. You are leaving for to go and present your report to the committee. I think I may relieve you, but I just want to leave you with this homework. The question, my question on TVET is precisely because I'm aware they do training, but I'm also aware that they are firms, employers who go there and ask for people who have got these skills. That is what then made me to ask that question. In that, how many, which sector of the, as much as you don't do it, but the question, my question was, which has not been responded to, in this new normal and challenging times, that you are not able to have that one-to-one, go to other sectors, to other areas, you are dependent on a telephone. Will it not be advisable for you to devise other mechanisms? So that's why the question was, if my questions are not within your scope, respond, and if you see a need for you to do that, maybe you'll say, we'll look into that, Chair, and try and see how possible and visible is. Western Cape, I always ask this question, even in my last deployment. If you talk about Western Cape, are you talking about Cape Town as the city, or are you talking about the province? Because there are rural areas in the Western Cape. Are they also getting, is it easier for them also to look for jobs? So you may not be able to. So I've always raised this thing that departments or whoever is presenting must make a distinction. Is it Western Cape? Is it Durban, in KZN, I'm making an example? Is it Port Elizabeth? Or is it the entire province? And then be able to say, in the city center, which is the Western Cape, people in the surroundings are able to do that. But there are those that are far, who are mostly in the rural areas of that particular province. Otherwise, I don't know if there are any other questions or comments, as well allowing you to leave. That is the homework for you as the SG of the department. Any other comments? You may leave, SG.
Chair, if you would allow me to quickly clarify and comment on the issues you raised before I step off. What happens with TVET, certainly we will consider them and we welcome this input, Chair. But it's more like refining our administrative records for purposes of us assisting us in making our official statistics much more stronger and be full of rigor. So we do appreciate this. What we do when we get administrative records, because the collection of data differs from TVET college to TVET college. What we do, Chair, we will put them through what we call SASCAF, South African Quality Assessment Framework, which is housed in our agency. And then firstly, we graduate them from being poor statistics, if they are indeed poor. We had one agency coming to us and say, we want you to SASCAF our data. And we said, we cannot even express opinion. It's poor statistics. From poor, we go to quality, manageable statistics to quality, and then official statistics. I'll give an example. Crime statistics, Chairperson, used to be statistics released by SAPS. At the stage, the statistician general gives a stamp because they have reached a level of quality that they are official statistics. And in time, we will expect them to meet prescripts because when they fail to do so, we can relegate them backwards. So is the same with our own products. The quarterly employment survey at some stage almost got relegated when there were issues that were picking up from the factory gates that were worrying us. So when it comes to quality, we are the first ones to say, here is a challenge. And indeed, Chairperson, on your second point, now it's eluding me a bit, and Chair, if you jog me a bit on your second point, just one keyword that you said, I will come back to it. Chair?
Okay. Which one? The one on the Western...
The Western Cape. Thank you. Yeah. No, yeah, thanks. What we do, Chairperson, we don't collect information on cities alone. We collect information from all South Africans, and we collect our samples must represent all settlement types, villages, townships, suburbs, informal settlement, farms, and everywhere. So when we talk about the Western Cape, we are talking about the entire Western Cape. It's not unemployment alone, Chairperson, that I need to say. When you look at issues of poverty, for example, in terms of poverty, it's the lowest in the Western Cape, and I'm not talking Cape Town, in the Western Cape. But the intensity of poverty is actually felt less in the city of Cape Town than anywhere else. So we do look at the city at some stage, but generally when we say the Northern Cape, we mean the entire province, not Kimberley. So we do reach out to everyone. When we don't reach out to all settlement types, when we don't reach out to all households, dwelling units of all types, when we don't reach out to all people of different ages, as well as in terms of male, female, we would create a bias and would not be able to release such data. So indeed, the Western Cape is the whole of the province, Chairperson. Let me also request that I will leave with Gwen. Gwen, our acting DDG in Population and Social Statistics, has to be assisting me to deal with questions in our own portfolio committee. But otherwise, Alirado and Faisal will remain behind. I thank you so much, Chairperson. And indeed, I thank the honorable members for continuing to engage us as DDG.
Thank you very much, SG. Honorable members, I think we have been given responses, and I don't see any hands, and we have then allowed the SG to leave together with Gwen. If there are any other comments, I think we've come to the end of our meeting, but safe to say that next week we'll then be having a meeting. I'll then have just to confirm when I was having a presentation from SIU around the report of UIF, as UIF is one of our entities that we always say we want to have a thorough oversight on them. And then a reminder that this weekend, Friday, Saturday, we're having a workshop which unfortunately we were not allowed to have it physical because we're on a alert level 3, which it doesn't then allow people in parliament who are not a parliament staff. So we were then, who are regarded as visitors, and department falls under that category of visitors. We will then have it via our digital, which is virtual. It's starting, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Sakaza, at 9 o'clock on Friday and again on Saturday. It's a very important workshop. It's a workshop that is going to take us through what then becomes the role and the responsibility of Productivity SA in the scope of our economy and labor, to the bargaining centers in the labor center, with the exception of the bargaining processes in the PSCBC, because those falls under the Department of Public Service and Administration. And also a unit that is housed at CCMA, which is called Essential Service. I think we thought that it's important that as employment and labor, we are taken through of what exactly is the role of that and of that unit, which is called Essential Service, which is chaired by Advocate Bono. I thought it's important, honorable members, that I remind you on that. And as we will then be preparing ourselves for tomorrow, I wish members a safe day, and that members must take care. Our meeting stands adjourned until we meet again on Friday. Thank you very much, honorable members. Are you still here?
Thanks. We are here, Chair. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Enjoy your day.
I will.
Have lots of fun, everyone. Enjoy the day.
You are still owing me chocolates.